Okay, so I'll just talk for a little while about our theme of sensory clarity. And as I said last week, you know, the Buddha made things so practical. The Buddha was all about, you know, your experience, what is actually happening in your experience, and getting clear about what our experience is. And it's just so awesome that he summarized it as, well, it's only six things. When the mind is clear, when we have sensory clarity, there are six things happening: sights, sounds, tastes, touches, smells, what did I miss? What am I missing? I'm drawing a blank. Sight, sound, taste, touch. That is five. The sixth is the mind. And again, the mind is everything that happens mentally. So images, thoughts, memories, intentions, consciousness, and everything in between. And the interesting thing, and this is not a metaphysical statement, this is a statement of our experience. Our thoughts are primarily recreations of our five physical senses. So when I say the word ball, notice that likely there's an image in your mind. And you just notice if there's an image in your mind, what does the ball look like? That's, you know, so these are concrete concepts, ball, and of course we are going to represent that with a physical sense. But if we talk about abstract concepts like freedom or justice, you know, if I say the word justice, know what happens in your mind. Not always, but often when I ask people, you know, they see the scales of justice, or they might see a courtroom, or they might hear a song about justice. So even abstract concepts, we're often representing them with a recreation of a physical sense. So our thoughts tend to be recreations, mental representations of our physical senses. And then we string them thoughts together into thinking, and then we're in a movie where it's action, action-packed, and we're the central character, we're the star, we're the leading role. But again, the data, the raw data of our experience is the physical senses, and then we create an imagination of the five physical senses with our mind. And so what's really interesting is that our allegiance is almost entirely to the sixth sense. 99.99 of our awareness of our senses goes to the mental sense. And so we have tremendous allegiance to the fantasy, and we spend very little time in the simple reality. It's very odd. And again, this isn't a metaphysical statement. This is just a statement of our experience. And what's even odder then is that we're incredibly loyal, married to awareness of the sixth sense. But the sixth sense is where all our difficulty lies. It's through the mind that we create separateness. It's through the mind that we create time. It's through the mind that we create stress. And so we're incredibly loyal. We could even say addicted to stress and suffering and separateness. It's odd. It's very odd. It's a very odd thing in our experience. And so our practice then is really about balancing out, not about trying to obliterate the sixth sense, because that would be impossible, simply trying to create some balance. And even if we could have 1% or 2% or 3 or 4% of our energy going to awareness of the five physical senses, that would be a huge difference. You know, that's doubling or tripling our sensory awareness. And I'm going to say a little more about we are just much happier, ironically, when we drop out of the mind and into the body, into our five physical senses. And so I want to read a poem from Mary Oliver about the process of dropping out of the mind and into the body. It's called The Summer Day, Mary Oliver. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she shifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know what a prayer is, but I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? I love the poem because she's really kind of just in this dreamy head space. Who made the world? Who made the swan? Who made the grasshopper? And then suddenly she wakes up. This grasshopper, you know, the one who's washing her face and eating by moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down. Like, that's incredible sensory awareness, incredible presence. She's right in the moment. And the this mind of nowness, you know, Eckhart Tolle has this book called The Power of Now. The power of now is that we drop out of the mind and into the body. And when we do that, we drop out of time and stress and separateness and suffering and into being and belonging and presence and love. And these are naturally there. We understand on the Buddhist path, these qualities are naturally there, like the sun that was always shining behind the clouds and is available anytime we really let go and drop into our physical experience. And we can summarize the mind that's really here and in the now and in presence, in belonging. You know, this part of us, we say about the past, what's done is done. We can say about the future, que sera, sera. And, you know, the cliche, but incredibly powerful, if we live it, it is what it is, about the present. That's the mind imbued with this present moment awareness. And I just, when I was an Anagarika, which is a monk in training in Thailand in 2004 for 3 months, we went and visited the abbot of a nearby monastery, Wat Pa Pong, which is the monastery where Ajahn Chah was the abbot, and Ajahn Chah was a very famous Thai teacher, very awake being. And he was the teacher of Jack Kornfield and many other Westerners. And so the abbot of the monastery at this time, Ajahn Chah had died, was Ajahn Liam. And Ajahn Liam, we went and had an audience with him, and a monk friend and I who knew the monastery took me over there, was kind of my ambassador. And I went and asked him about my life. But when we met him, it was a Thai afternoon day in April. And so it was quite hot. But I have no memory of the heat. I do have a memory of just this sunny afternoon feeling. And that feeling was meeting Ajahn Liam. He was so relaxed. And in Thai, that there's a phrase, sabai sabai, you know, like, good, good, it's all good. And he just exuded this presence and this relaxation. And we met him out where he was doing some landscaping out on the monastery grounds. And we walked back with him to the sala, the meditation hall, where we had discussion with him. And all I can say, he was just sauntered. He was so relaxed. And my memory of him is he was the sunny afternoon. And, you know, I asked him about my life. He was quite insightful and psychic in talking to me about my life. And, you know, this was someone incredibly in his senses. And it was a palpable presence, you know, just physically, I relaxed. I sort of became the sunny afternoon too. So, just look here at my notes. So, I'm going to just say about some of the things we're working with sensory clarity, and we've been working with the difference between sensation and body image and thoughts about our body. Sensation is a physical experience, and body image is a mental creation, and thinking about the body is a mental creation. So when we're feeling tingle, throb, pulse, buzz, etc., that's one of our five physical senses. When we're seeing the knee in our mind, thinking it's my knee, that's mental. That's actually not through a physical sense. So, and when we start to have sensory clarity, when we start to know what sense gate our experience is happening through, we gain incredible power and wisdom and the ability to recognize that, this is just thinking. It's not actually happening. This is simply a creation in one of my sense doors, which is the mental sense door. So our thought world is not the real world. This is the fundamental insight that frees us. And then thinking can be something that serves us instead of rules us. So, and when we get clarity, when we have clarity about the difference between the physical and mental event, we see that mental events involve the mind fabricating past and future, whereas the five physical senses are present moment experiences in the now. Where is the past or future when you're just feeling tingle or throb or pulse? So secondly, mental events are volitional and conditioned by our personality. Physical events are free of our personality. That can be a massive relief. Mental events easily proliferate into thinking, which is riddled with complexity, doubt, and uncertainty. Physical events are simple, clear, and grounding. If you're just feeling your foot on the ground, there's no doubt. There's just this clear, sure experience. It's a relief to be in our body. Mental events convert easily into emotions riddled with drama, anxiety, and suffering. Physical events, even painful ones, are free of suffering. Mental events are riddled with cultural conditioning. Physical events are free of such conditioning. Mental events involve the creation of a me, a separate self, that's the root of all suffering. There's no self, no separateness, and no suffering in a physical sense event. Mental events lead easily into doing mode, the relentless need to manipulate our experience. Physical events allow the mind to access being, where we experience things like clarity and presence and fulfillment. So again, to drop out of the mind and into the body is to drop out of time, out of stress, out of separateness, out of suffering, and into presence, well-being, and belonging, and love. So I'll just end with a very famous poem from William Carlos Williams called The Red Wheelbarrow. A very, very short poem, very famous, written, I think, in the 1930s. The Red Wheelbarrow. So much depends upon a red wheelbarrow glazed with rain, water, beside the white chickens. Just really see this poem. I'll read it again. So much depends upon a red wheelbarrow glazed with rainwater beside the white chickens. I'm not a literary person. I don't have any knowledge of the theory of poetry. I don't know why that one's so famous, but my interpretation of it is this. This is what the Zen tradition calls suchness, when we're dropped out of the mind and we're just in present moment's awareness of our physical experience. Life feels so full when we're in that being and presence, and everything seems to have a kind of import. And if you were really in quiet mind and you were just looking at a red wheelbarrow glazed with rainwater and the white chickens, you might think so much depends on it. That's just a quality of suchness. You just feel like life is pregnant with meaning. So I will stop here.